I'm going to offer to you now another improvisation on the theme of awareness with breathing, because that seems to be a common ground for people practicing Vipassana and Mahamudra. Going a little, you cannot hear me in the back. It's probably the problem with the position of the microphone. That's better. Ah, yeah, much better. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then, because this is a good opportunity to speak with all of you, at 5 o'clock we will do a question and answer session. Like yesterday, some of you can put some questions and I will respond to them. In the meantime, I will be able to read also the many little notes with all the questions. So, those of you who like, let's go on a journey together. The journey for me, when I meditate, always starts with dropping ideas about what needs to happen, what should happen, no ideas. I will be just surprised as you what will come now, okay? But the breathing will be our guide. That's always there, and you feel it already, breathing in and breathing out. And I notice that my body is making light swings, and actually this fluidity in the body helps me to open the heart. You might feel for yourself as well that is a slight dance. It's as if you were a little bit dancing with the breath. Yesterday we already spoke about this little self-massage. And this is actually the same phenomenon. Letting the chest participate in the dance. And when I feel some pain, I open up to it. I don't drive it away. Opening up and breathing into that area with the deepest acceptance which is possible. The fluidity travels up from the heart region to the spine. And it goes down all the way into the lumbar region, into the pelvic area. Maybe we are a little bit like a bamboo or a strong grass or a young tree in the wind. A soft breath, and this breeze is moving. It's moving the body. And actually the breeze is our own breathing. The lower body also participates, however, a little bit differently. It's more like the roots of the tree, giving stability to the movement of the spine. So breathing in and breathing out, we experience the whole breathing body. From the roots to the tip. And we allow for these tiny movements. Everyone decides for herself, for himself, just how much of that is helpful, in which way you want to allow these movements. They are very subtle. And when we feel emotions, when the thoughts are passing through, we are aware that the physical sensation changes along. So breathing in and breathing out, we are aware of all these subtle changes. And then, of course, these mental phenomena, these mental processes, they receive a little bit more of our attention. Before we go too far into ordinary thinking, the Buddha encourages us to feel the joy of relaxation. That happiness of body and mind. In the middle of the pain, that is also the relaxation. It's quite incredible. The Buddha very clearly talks here about feeling the joy and the mind and well-being in the body. And this is the basis to continue the journey. Try to find a little bit of that. Maybe just a little glimpse of inner ease and well-being. Breathe with it, breathe into it, and let the body dance. Let it continue to be so fluid. It's a little bit like being massaged by gentle waves in the ocean. And return to the state of the mind itself, deeper inside, beyond the thinking processes. We feel our own level of tension and we flow with it. Breathing in, breathing out. And while we are very conscious of this, I invite you to be conscious of that spacious dimension of mind in which all of this is happening. As if we were watching the dancing of clouds in endless space. The wind, the prana, is that karmic energy, that energy created by all the impressions stored in our mind, living in our mind is better to say, forming the way we perceive the world. So these are the pranic winds, you can say. And we make space for them. We allow them to pass through and we manage not to react in the habitual way. This is called the purification of karma. It is actually the possibility that these energies can transform as they become conscious And they become energies of wisdom. We call it wisdom prana. In Sanskrit, jnana prana. The timeless awareness energies. So it's the space, this enormous spacious awareness with this equanimity of not reacting, of not intervening with attachment and aversion. This spacious awareness allows for even deeper layers in us to show their dynamic nature. I'm reminded of experiences in the mountains when sometimes the clouds are densely packed below in the valleys. And as the atmosphere becomes lighter, as the day rises, then these clouds, they come up, they begin to dissolve in the warmer air. And this is what happens in mind as well, the deeper layers. They rise up. Some of it becomes conscious, not everything. Much of it just dissolves without giving rise to thoughts. And without knowing it, we actually can even do this connected to others, because we feel so much, we vibrate, we resonate so much with those people around us. So there is a bodhisattva practice called Tonglen, which is breathing in. And you imagine that you had the capacity to breathe in from the valleys around you. These clouds. And then you invite also the tension and suffering of others to come into your heart, which is the spacious, warm awareness in which things can dissolve. Nothing to do, just in the same way as if we were on a mountain peak, we can see many valleys. In that same way, our heart mind can feel many streams of being. So let us continue breathing a little bit like that, and you only do what you feel like. Don't Don't feel pressured by me or by these descriptions. Allow yourself to be breathing in a spacious awareness. And remember to allow for the subtle dance of your body. Remember to take a pause from time to time. These fantastic pauses, they can be anywhere in our practice. And perhaps you see how it is. Most certainly you see a little bit more than at the beginning of the practice. Some understanding is there. the practice which we shared, which has happened, you know, I've never done it exactly like this before. It is also a completely new example with the mountaintop and the clouds and so on. Yes, all of this is completely fresh. It's not part of the repertoire. It's because we are sitting together. That's how it happens, because we share. That's how. Now, but basically, for you who want to know the structure of what we were doing, we were following the same four satipatthanas, yes, as you know. Body, physical formations, mental formations, mental movements, mind as such, and then the understanding, the seeing. So the four satipatthanas which the Buddha taught, they were there. And what happened is that as I sat down, I felt a great pain in the heart, right? So, okay, accept it. Yes, then dance with it, breathe with it. Yeah, so then I was thinking maybe it has something to do with all of us. Yes, maybe it is my own, you know, like my own body being a body of resonance. So we use our body like that. We take good care. So first is we take good care of our body. You take good care of the body, you don't really know for how other people should do it. You have to, you know, you can't tell anybody. So best thing is to let the breath flow through and to allow for those movements to arise that want to arise. And they are pretty natural, actually. They are very small, but we know that our body has different rhythms, and there is, you know, there are pulsations that are. So to allow for whatever wants to manifest is the best thing, not to block. Because one thing is for sure, that when I get such a pain, I block somewhere. It's clear. Yeah, so I have to dance around. So the breathing was starting from the heart, and then it went upwards in my case. And I let you participate in that, because I do believe in this phenomenon of resonance, that we are connected. So I do believe it could be helpful. And then the movement was going downwards. Yes, and then I felt, okay, the breathing of the legs today is different. They have more this element of stability. Yeah, this stability on the ground. Yeah, giving like the roots of a whatever, a young tree. Yeah. And this is very often the case, of course. This has not happened for the first time, but it's also when you sit on a chair, you can do like this. You sit with the feet down, you spread out a little bit so that the same angle like when sitting cross-legged, your feet touch the ground, and then also on the chair, your basin is completely free to move. Forward, backwards, sidewards. Yeah, it's like, and this freedom of movement, this is what we need. Now, when you lean, then it won't be possible, but the more you move up in front in the chair, then you liberate your basin. And actually, what you do, you liberate all these energies, and the breath does it for you. But just continue breathing and follow the breathing as it wants to move. It moves anyhow. So you see, when I breathe in, there is maybe a natural stretching of the body. When I breathe out, there's maybe a natural relaxation of the body. You know, like you find your own way. There's no good and right way to do it. Just whatever is most natural for you. That was the part with the physical formations. And in that, we accept all the sensations that arise. You know, the good old technique of all practitioners, no attachment, no aversion to whatever arises, making space. So you can say this was already, because of the loving kindness involved, this was kind of a metta meditation. You can might even say bodhicitta meditation, including the body, yeah? And using the body as a resonance. And then within that, remember I told you, you can feel how thoughts and emotions reflect on the body. Now, we were a little bit quick in that, I admit. But for seasoned practitioners who have been practicing a long time, you become aware that you cannot have a single thought without a reflection in the body. It's impossible. The prana of the mental movement and the prana of the physical sensations, they go together. I touched on the subject yesterday a little bit. In Tibetan, it's called Lung Sem Yanme. Lung means prana, sem mind, yanme inseparable. And this is the inseparability of prana and mind, of subtle energies and mind. This is a very important understanding that we work with in Mahamudra. So we never separate the two. Because this body is not considered material, it is energy. We know it from physics, from biochemistry and so on, from biology. This body only seems material. Actually, to the last bit of the cells inside the bones, everything is in constant movement. All these cells are breathing. You know, we talk in biology, we talk about the breathing of the cells, the cellular breathing. This is the osmotic exchange with the surroundings and so on. And this happens all the time. And now we even know that the brain cells are continuing to breathe and to change until the end of the life. It's all the time. The bones as well. So there's no part exempt of that. And this was known to the old yogis. You know, more than 2,000 years ago, they knew this. They considered this body to be prana. And the mental movements, the second part of satipatthana, is the mental formations. This is the expressive part of mind where we think, we have images, memories, certain ideas. Much of this is non-conceptual movement, but it's movement, it's like impulses. Like, for example, she makes a sound and I look what this sound is. It's actually just the scratching of the pen on her paper, right? So now I found out what it is. But the intention to move, it was not conceptual. It was non-conceptual interest, what's going on. And like this, we have many non-conceptual movements constantly. Even you know, it comes out with concepts now, what I'm saying. The words come out and they are concepts, of course. But if you watch yourself talking, if you talk very fluidly to someone you like and or where you're not afraid, you're not formulating your phrases before and then you spit them out. No. Actually, non-conceptually, you already know, you know what you want to express, and the expression then comes, and then it forms. So it's actually what we call the concepts, the words, in the same way the conceptual mind. This is the last product of a very creative mind. It's the end of it. You can call it also the tip of the iceberg, if you want. You know, the rest is underneath, under the surface. This means mostly unconscious. But if you are a practitioner of deep mindfulness, then you begin to know more and more of what happens under the surface. You are able to see underwater, okay? When you put on your goggles, your glasses, yes, goggles, I think, goggles, then you can see underwater. And this is, when we sit in meditation, actually, what we do is we put on our goggles. I'm meditating now means I put on my goggles. That means I can see more now. I notice more. Because I keep everything still. Keeping everything still. Then I have a very fine awareness of what's going on. And suddenly I begin to discover what other people call the subconscious. For a Buddhist practitioner, what others call unconscious or subconscious is only preconscious, because the consciousness can reach there. And this is what we do in meditation. We go to the less conscious level of our experience, and they come into mind. And that's where you think that you have more thoughts than before. You think, wow, this is crazy. I have never been thinking so much. No, you only discover now. You have been thinking that much at least before. But now you discover because you have your goggles on, because then you can see the small fish, right? Before you only saw those jumping out of the water. And only those fish existed, and those where you looked in, and the big ones you could see from above. But now that you have this sensitivity and the calm mind, suddenly you see all the swarms of small fish. Wow! What a life is going on there. And this is the so-called subconscious life, but it's enormous. And it's actually what nourishes the oceans. That's what is, that's where the life is going on. And you can go down to the plankton level. You know, it's like we are only at the little fish now, but you can go even finer. Okay. So this is what we call mental movements. This is the second of the satipatthanas. And the third one, which the Buddha called mind, citta, then actually this is beginning to taste the ocean, tasting the water, if I stay in the example. You know, it doesn't have to do with movement so much anymore. You will see that that what we call the taste of our mental experience is also related to movement, but not so obviously. For example, you can feel sad or irritable or light, bright, happy, without having thoughts right now going on. There is this feeling as if your mind had a taste, yeah? It has the taste of sadness, or it has the taste of lightness, of freedom. But you cannot identify a movement right away that would be causing that feeling. It's like the momentary soup we are swimming in, yeah, has a certain taste. And this is, you can say, I mean, this is more than clever. The Buddha was a genius in describing us this, because it is due to which karmic soup we are into that the mental movements, the thoughts, will arise. They arise from that predisposition. A narrow, fearful mind will give rise to fearful mental movements, but it doesn't always need to have those movements. It's already tense without experiencing movements. And this is the subconscious mind for most people, and it becomes conscious to the practitioner. The practitioners, they will be able, you know, if you're really good in exploring your mind, then this is like you present an unknown soup to a good cook. And you ask him or her, what are the different spices in this soup? First thing I can feel is a slight taste of sadness. And then I feel an interest, some joy, some keen interest. Oh, and then there is a lot of fear. Oh, and there is an underground happiness, a yearning even for living that happiness. And you go like this, you know, and you will feel that your mind is not one mind, but actually it has different tastes to it, like different spices in a soup. And depending on where we direct our attention, then one of these aspects becomes to be dominant. So a sad person in deep depression is not aware of the other elements of what he or she is feeling. So she is so sad, so depressed, that she is unaware of the love that she feels. And in therapy, we need to become aware, not to make the depression go away, but to be aware that there's something else going on. That is love. And of course, we always find fear. But But in depression, we find so much anger also. And sorry to say, if you have been through it, but we always find pride. Always. Depression without pride doesn't exist. It's inverted pride. It's often the pride of being nil, yeah, of being stupid, but it's self-concern. And we find these layers, yeah. So, and they are not layers like in a cake where one is above the others, but it's a field with various tastes. And this is what the Buddha wanted us to explore in the third Satipatthana. He gives examples from wide to narrow, from liberated to imprisoned, from sad to happy. And this you can read in the Satipatthana, where he gives those examples, in the Satipatthana Sutta. And this is a typical Asian way of saying, you know, when you say small or big, it means look at the size of something. If you say sweet and sour, it means look at the taste of something. Yeah, they just name the two poles, and the practitioner is asked to feel just how free is the mind now? How open is it? Just how is it? And this is possible to explore when, thanks to the previous two satis, calming the physical formations, calming the mental formations, then the mind has to become really clear. And then it's possible to feel the taste. You know, like someone who wants to taste the next wine or eat the next soup, it's better to have clear water to rinse the mouth, you know, so that you have a clear taste of what's going on. So you have to let the mind become clear of the preceding impressions, and then you can feel those deeper layers of what's going on, of who you are, actually. And as a natural consequence of that, so if we do not get attached to the calm which arises, to the different tastes, to all of that, then we liberate the mind from all clinging to what's going on and what we feel. And that's when we have no preconceived ideas anymore. That's when the seeing happens. That's the fourth sati. This is seeing the nature of experiences. And this seeing will always happen when there is a certain degree of clarity, that you have managed to come to a certain degree of calm. There is more understanding of yourself and the world. Now, in the meditation we were sharing, then I did what I definitely didn't want to do. I came here and to Israel, and I thought, well, the people which I meet, I will not introduce them to Tonglen. It's one thing I won't do. You know, it's this giving and taking, and, you know, this bodhicitta practice and so on. But the way it happened then felt most natural. I was just talking to you about the other valleys which you can also see from the top of a mountain, and that you can create an atmosphere in which even the suffering of others can dissolve. So that is actually bodhisattva practice of Satipatthana. So you feel your own mind state, but this mental state is not separate from the others around. Very often we feel tastes of emotions that we kind of understand not to be quite ours. And yet we treat them as ours. We breathe them in, and we breathe out, we breathe through them, and it doesn't matter from where they come. Wherever the clouds come from, we take them, you know? We are the space above the mountains. This is in the heart, yeah? It's in the heart, mind. There is this space. And if we have properly taken care of ourselves, then we can open up to what concerns others. And then that is not a difference. It doesn't make a difference. We just continue breathing. with whatever arises, and we don't solidify any of that. That's why clouds are such a good example. Clouds are just really difficult to solidify. Okay, sometimes they become hail, but okay, normally it's more like evaporating. Yes, it's like, and this is what is a perfect example of what happens in our heart when our awareness goes into some emotional state, connecting with some emotional movements or tastes. It evaporates in that spacious awareness of non-clinging. Whenever there is no clinging, there is spacious awareness. It's very easy. You don't have to create that spacious awareness. It's there as soon as there is no clinging. You get that? This is very, very easy and important. No clinging. This means not opposing also, not holding on and not opposing, no clinging, no aversion. So it's like space. Things happen, and since there's no one grasping, no one fighting, hey, space is there. Wow. It's the basic principle of martial arts. Yes? Attack, give space. Yeah? So the energy moves through. Let the energies move through. And the best way to learn that, or one good way, is with breathing. Because that's natural movement, it's naturally connected to space. So it's a good example to learn how to deal with emotions. That was the explanation of what we were practicing. Oh my God, it's on time. I'm on time. Deep breathing. Let's sing the Tyler mantra. Like this, I will use more time. Look, you asked me the Tyler mantra, and another was, you have put it on the board, you will see it written somewhere. It's just that she wrote the Tibetan version, which ends with Soha, and the Sanskrit version I was singing with you ends with Svaha. Same story. Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha Svaha. Now the Om is the universal syllable on the Indian subcontinent, and it refers to the origin of sounds, which for the Buddhist practitioner is the origin of awareness. So with Om, we call on the wisdom of all Buddhas. We invite the awareness, wisdom of all enlightened ones. This is the meaning of Om in Buddhist mantras. Tare is the declination of Tara, which means she, the one who liberates. The word Tara means liberatrice, if you can do that in English. In French we can do that, but so she who liberates. And that's an activity of an awakened being. She is the great mother who liberates all sentient beings, who does her best to do so. Of course, she needs our help because no one can liberate us, but she is there to help us. Om Tare Tu Tare. The Tu before the Tare is an emphasis, is like full liberation. Or something like that. And Om Tare Tu Tare, so she who liberates, completely liberates, and Ture, and she does it quickly. Tura, Ture, and Tura means fast, swift, rapidly, quick. She is the quickest one among the bodhisattvas and bodhisattvis because she's like a mother, and you have never seen anyone quicker than a mother whose child is in danger. That's the quickest thing you can see on Earth. Yes? And you know of the stories that a mother has lifted a truck to pull a child from underneath and so on. You know, no thoughts, just do it. And this is the energy that this mantra communicates. The Ture is for this swift action of being there. So the bodhicitta mind, embodied by the great mother called Tara, liberates us swiftly. And soha, swaha means so be it. Yeah? May it be so that this, by the wisdom of all the Buddhas, the quick liberation occurs right now. This is like the meaning of the mantra. Okay. I don't know if it helps you. I always forget about the meaning of the mantra. I just like it. And to know the meaning, of course, helps to open up to it. And you don't need to think that there is an angel living somewhere in space called Tara. You don't have to solidify her. It's more an energy of bodhicitta, of compassion, that manifests when needed in many different forms. Countless colors, countless forms. But the story goes that she took the vow to always come back as a woman, always, because that's the more difficult position to be in. And there needs to be reinforcement for the female side on this planet. So she took the vow. There are so many male bodhisattvas already. Let's strengthen women's lip. That's the mantra of women's lip, actually. Men practice it just as well. I practice a lot of Tara and have had great benefit of that. Yes? So let's sing it together. I want to hear you, those who like it, I want to hear you loud. At a certain time I will reduce my voice and I want to hear you. Okay? Because I heard that some of you want to take it home and then you need to be able to sing it. Om Tadem Tu Tadem Tu De Swaha. Om Tadem Tu Tadem Tu De Swaha. Om Tadem Tu Tadem Tu De Swaha. Om Tadem Tu Tadem Tu De Swaha.